Hello, and welcome to Legal Management Talk, the official podcast of the Association of Legal Administrators. I'm your host, Justin Askenazy. So today, as you can see, we have a very special guest. It's Declan the Penguin, and he's going to be talking to us about what is the top of mind for a lot of firms today, and that is the billable hour. Hi, Declan. Thanks for joining. How are you doing today? Okay, not one for small talk, I see. Well, let's just get right into it. What can you tell us about value-based pricing as opposed to the billable hour? Nothing? Okay, you can't tell us anything about the billable hour? Can we get someone who knows what they're talking about, please?
Hi, Justin. I'm Sean. I'm Declan.
Oh, Sean.
I may be able to help.
Well, thanks. That's great. Our actual guest today is Sean Jardine. He's a lawyer, a consultant. He's an author. He recently wrote a book titled Ditch the Billable Hour, which, of course, is the topic that we're talking about today. Thanks for joining us, Sean.
Thank you very much for having me on. I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah. So I know that you're based in the UK, but I understand you recently spent some time in South Africa. How was that?
It was very nice. The weather in South Africa in February is delightful. So I managed to meet a number of lawyers and law firms out there and have lots of conversations about dishing the billable hour. But also I managed to play a little bit of golf, which is one of my passions. So I had a great time.
Great. Someplace I definitely want to get to at some point in the future. Yeah, so we're going to talk about the billable hour and specifically value-based pricing, which I know has come up as an alternative to the billable hour. So I guess my first question, I think what a lot of what we read is titled with a rhetorical question of, is the billable hour dead? But I think currently that answer is probably no. So I think the better question is, should the billable hour be dead?
You're asking the wrong person. Insofar as I've got a very firm view on the billable hour, and it's in its death throes at the moment. I think that there's a lot of people now worried about the billable hour. There's a lot of people worried about generative AI and how that impacts the billable hour. And if I was setting up a law firm now, I would not be basing my revenue model on the billable hour. I would be looking at an alternative.
So with value-based pricing, can you kind of describe what it is and, what are some of the ways that lawyers and firms can determine what value is?
Oh, two very big questions. Okay, let's deal with the last one first, determining what value is. Now, value is complicated, and we will all have different visions and versions of what is valuable to us. So when we go to a restaurant and order a bottle of wine, we have different values. We have different perspectives on what we're prepared to pay. When we go to a car wash, we will choose different car wash menus depending on, how much we love our car, how much we, where we're going. We might think we better get the special wax done. And value can be a feeling. It's very hard sometimes. And value is contextual. It will change depending on where you are. You will pay much less for a glass of water in the office or at your home, the amount that your water costs you, than you will pay in a high-end restaurant for a bottle of water. We know that context will change. You would pay even more for a bottle of water if it was the last bottle of water and you were staggering out of a desert and you came across a man selling the last bottle of water. You would pay more. So context impacts value. And value can be a feeling. And I always talk about fair trade bananas. Why do people buy fair trade bananas? And the answer is, it makes us feel good if we're actually buying a product that we know a larger share of the purchase price is going back to the producers. So value itself can be complicated. And where I think we as lawyers go wrong sometimes is that we believe we understand everybody wants everything at the cheapest possible price. And if that was so, we'd all be driving the same car, a very cheap car. We'd all be shopping in the same supermarket for our clothing, and we'd all be eating the same kind of food. And we don't, and we know that. So value it changes all the time. What is value-based pricing? Well, I have two definitions of it. The first one is if I give you an answer to a legal problem that saves you $100,000, the cost of that is not the 6 minutes or quarter, 20 minutes that it takes for me to give you that answer. The value in that is the 6 minutes, the 20 minutes, or whatever it is, plus the 36 years of experience that allow me to answer that question in 6 minutes. So it's really arriving at a price for what we do that is fair to the lawyer that creates the value and the client that gets the benefit from that. And you may know of the old joke about a machine that broke down, a critical piece of factory machinery that broke down, and no one could fix it. And they got the old engineer. They got the old engineer who came into the factory, and he stayed in the factory listening to the machine. So he was there for 2 days. At the end of 2 days, he took a hammer out of his toolbox, tapped the machine, it started running, and production was re-enabled. And he sent a bill for his services for $10,000. And the owner of the factory said, "Well, I need a breakdown of this machine. I need a breakdown of this invoice." And the breakdown they got was cost of hammer, $5, knowing where to tap, $9,995. It is that knowledge thing. Now, that has become a bit of a joke. People talk about the old engineer joke. Do you know what? I found out about 6 months ago that is a true story. And it happened at the Henry Ford factory of an engineer coming in, knowing where to tap or knowing where a machine was going wrong, and brought it back to life. And he gave Henry Ford that invoice where it was, knowing where to tap was the big chunk of the value that he created. And they paid it by return. It's all there in Wikipedia. It must be true.
Exactly. So we know that value-based pricing is not a new concept, but it is still kind of a way to keep up with the current times. With the introduction of AI into the legal space, that really changes how lawyers are going to be billing for their time. And I know in the book you talk a lot about how disjointed a lot of billable hour policies are. And so it seems to me that this is a way to really coalesce and kind of firm up policies that will allow firms to make the most out of AI and still able to bill for their time fairly and accurately.
Absolutely. And the thing is that what I'm a great fan of is policies and frameworks and making sure everybody's on the same hymn sheet, that we know what we're doing. But also, when it comes to value-based pricing as opposed to the billable hour, for the billable hour, you need a calculator. For value-based pricing, you need courage. And so that if I'm a great fan of giving clients three options, think of car wash menus again, gold, silver, bronze. Let's give a client three options, three price options for a piece of work about. And the variables could be who's going to be delivering, when is it going to be delivered, how is it going to be delivered in respect of that. And quite often you will think, well, a client might go for the middle option, but sometimes they go for the most expensive option. And I can give you a real life example that I worked with a client. It was an employment lawyer who was doing employment law contracts for a commercial client. And we gave them three prices. And one was, we will send you a load of templates that you populate yourself. We'll check your homework, £2,000. We will do it for you in 3 weeks' time, £5,000. Or we will do it for you tomorrow for £8,000. And the client chose the £8,000 option. Now, was the client happy? Yes, they were prepared to pay that value because for them it was strategically important to get it the next day. Was the lawyer happy? Yes, I'm going to do half my monthly target tomorrow for one piece of work. Wonderful. Were the owners of the law firm happy? I really, really hope so, because actually their lawyer was there going to have a bumper month exceeding target because they trusted the methodology and decided to give it a go and have that courage to produce those options for clients. And sometimes lawyers lack that courage. We sometimes lack the self-confidence to ask for more money. And that's really where I hope I've designed a framework that people can follow to say, let's do that. Let's do that work and try and actually recover some of the value that ordinarily we might leave on the table.
Yeah, and from a client's perspective, who doesn't like to have more choice,
And the thing is, if you think about the maths, if I give you a take it or leave it, one price, hourly rate or leave it, it's a 50-50. You're either going to pay my hourly rate or you're not. It's a 50-50. If I give you three choices and a fourth is leave it, I've got a 75%, 25%. I increase my options of selling to you. And we know that clients, effectively, they've got four options. They can do it themselves. They can do nothing. They can instruct the law firm that they're ringing, or they can instruct somebody else. Now, if they're ringing, if they're picking up the phone, they've already discounted the first two options. They've discounted doing nothing and they've discounted doing it themselves. So it's actually only two choices. Am I going to instruct you, who I'm happen to be on the phone to, or am I going to instruct your competitor? And if we all know that lawyers are always looking to try and have a unique selling point, what differentiates us from our competition? How about this for people to consider? Because I know law firms are doing this and my clients do this. They will say to their clients when pitching for work, we will never deliver you a bill that you've not previously authorized. Just say that again. We will never deliver a bill that the client, has not previously authorized. Wow, I'm not going to get a shock. I'm going to be told what it is. And if those choices of billing options are a gold, silver, bronze, you're going to think, God, my lawyer's really looking after me. Because sometimes you might want to go for that gold option and have all the bells, all the whistles. But sometimes you might think, do you know what? Good enough is good enough for this particular transaction, and I'm happy to pay that level of price. Well, happy days. But then we, as the lawyers, have scoped what we're doing, and the where we do fall, at the current model, what we do, we end up doing a gold service for a bronze price. And but if you scope the work properly at the outset, you deliver your bronze service for your bronze price. And if a client wants a gold service and wants to move up, we can say, yeah, you can do that. We're happy to deliver that, but you've got to pay more. And that's really where, once we've created this framework, once our troops, talk about penguins, the pioneer penguins in the group, once our group of penguins understand the methodology, we have that framework and it will work. It will work in your organizations.
Yeah, and I know that that also kind of ties in with how often the billable hour concept, it takes the personalization and the humanity out of the client representation process, and really figuring out what clients want and what they're willing to pay for, serves both sides well.
Absolutely. Finding out that a client is not a good fit for a law firm is really important. But the time to find that out is at the beginning. Not at the end when you've done all the work and then you've discovered that the client can't pay the bill. So it's really important at the beginning to spend time with the client. What are the objectives? What are the outcomes? Because people come, well, quite often when I work with law firms, I do partners away days and things like this. I said, what is it that clients buy from you? And they say, our knowledge, our expertise. And they're not coming to lawyers saying, give me a bag full of knowledge and expertise, I'm going to take that away. What they're coming to lawyers with is, I've got a problem. I have got something I want to resolve. If I've got a criminal law problem, I want to know my outcome is, am I going to go to jail or am I going to get a heavy fine? That's my outcome. That's what I'm interested in. I am not interested in the court sentencing guidelines. I'm interested in me. What does it mean for me? If I'm a corporation and I've facing a tax investigation, again, I'm not interested in the revenue authorities' guidelines about how they investigate this. I'm interested in, are these transactions I've made going to be overturned? And is it going to impact my tax situation? Is it going to cost me money? These are the outcomes. If I am buying a residential property, I want to know that is the house of my dreams. We have been looking to live on that street for years. And my children start the new term in May. Am I going to be in that house in May so my kids start school? Those are the outcomes. And quite often as lawyers, we forget that. We get involved in the transaction, in the paperwork and those inputs. And our clients don't care. They really don't care about the inputs. They can care about the outcomes. And one of the reasons we don't spend enough time chatting and finding out what those are is because we're all wedded to the billable hour. If I spend half an hour chatting to you, Justin, that's half an hour I can't charge for. And lawyers talk about non-chargeable and chargeable time. And even when I was working and running a law firm, and we were, in the past doing the billable hour, I would always ask my lawyers to think of it as chargeable time. And investment time, not non-chargeable, investment time, because we're investing either in that client relationship. I might be investing in checking a younger lawyer's work, making sure that, or giving them some guidance about it, but I'm investing. So therefore, let's invest in whatever it is we're doing, whether it's client relationships, whether what we're doing with lawyers, but let's try and, even if you're in a firm that is going to still carry on billing by the hour. And I know that there are many that will want to carry on doing that because change is hard for law firms. Think of it as an investment time. Because I've had one law firm partner, litigation lawyer, and I talked to him about creating options and these versions. He said, I haven't got time for that, Sean. I've got to get on with the work. And I'm thinking, no, you don't know what your client wants yet. But this is all part of the process where if we can do it in step by step, in baby steps, and I'm a great believer in the old saying that every long journey starts with a single step. If we have a framework, we can follow it and go on that journey.
Yeah, and that transitions, nicely into something we have to talk about, and that is the change management aspect of this, and how do you introduce a concept that is, for many firms, I'm sure, fairly radical, and change mindsets, which is in anywhere incredibly hard. But especially in legal.
Well,
So, yeah, what are the kind of the initial steps if I'm a firm leader and my ears have perked up listening to this and I'm thinking this may be a good fit for my firm, but how am I going to even get this started, much less get across the finish line?
okay, look. You've hit on a very, very important point. And the important point is this is a change management project. And I'm sure lots of your members deal with change management projects, projects in law firms, projects in industries that have a beginning, middle, and an end. And this is the same. It is not, value-based pricing does not get implemented in what I call the Jean-Luc Picard syndrome, where the Star Trek captain says, make it so. An email comes out saying, implement this. That's not it. It is change management program. Now, I'm a great fan of an American author And John Cotter from the Harvard Business School. Anybody who needs to know anything about change management should buy a copy of this book. Here I am plugging someone else's book. It happens to be an American too. John Cotter, Harvard Business School, he is the guru of change management. And he's written a book called Our Iceberg is Melting. It is a fable about a group of penguins who are on an iceberg. And if they do not change, their iceberg is going to shatter and all the baby penguins are going to die. This book is perfect for lawyers. Why do I say that? It's got pictures in it. It's got large print. You can read it in an hour and a quarter. And it has the 8 steps to change management of implementing a project. And Cotter's methodology is rock solid. And I'm sure many of your members will probably already have this book. So I, in my book, followed Cotter's 8 steps. So it was the same thing, the same steps to change management. You first of all have to have a reason to change. What is the paradigm shift that you are going to make? What is going to cause you to do this? It could be generative AI. It could be you just want to get off the billable hour. It could be that your lawyers are saying, I don't want to do billable hour anymore. I want to embrace value-based pricing. So that's your first P. That's your P for paradigm. The second step in the process is get together a pilot group. Group of pioneer penguins, your P for pioneers. So we've got to then get this group together who want to give this a go, are prepared to invest some time in this. We are then going to, third P is going to, we're going to plan. We're going to actually plan what we're doing here and have a plan. And your members, I'm sure, will be very good at preparing plans. So we've got to make sure we've got a plan and a process and create a vision. We're then going to promote, fourth P, promote this vision to everybody in the firm. This is where we're going. This is what we've got in mind. This is how we're going to do it. This is what we're thinking about when we're going to do this. Then we've got the fifth P. We've got to permit people to give it a go. Value-based pricing is an art, not a science. People will get it wrong. That's okay, as long as we learn from the outcomes. But we can't have career-limiting decisions made by, oh, look, that client didn't like it. That's not good enough. There cannot be a blame culture. We've got to create this psychologically safe space for the for people to practice this in, so that when we're permitting and we're promoting, we've then got to create short-term wins and recognize short-term wins, and which is P for prizes, so that when we hear about the employment lawyer who did 2,000, 5,000, 8,000, and the client went for 8,000, yeah, we're celebrating those wins so people know it's happening and it's working in our organization. The seventh P is persevere. Every change management project takes time. We've got to keep going. We've got to keep people in the tent. We've got to keep them enthused. We've got to keep the pedal to the metal. We've got to keep going. So that's the seventh P. And the eighth P is that passion, P for passion, to have that culture change. Because it, you can probably tell I am quite passionate about this as a subject. I love it as a subject. I love talking about it as a subject. And I know that lawyers, once they embrace it, can have better working lives. They will have a better work-life balance. Their clients will respect them more for what they do. We will, I'm a great fan of sacking poor clients. And when I survey law firms that I work with, one of the questions I always ask is, do you act for clients who are unprofitable and too difficult to deal with? One firm I answered that 96% of their staff said yes. The lowest I've ever had is 56%. So the chances are your members are acting for clients who really they don't want to act for. And someone's got to be brave enough to say, we're going to stop. So we've got to have this passion to create the culture so that people love coming into work on a Monday. They love working for the brand. They love what they do. And they feel that they are getting the value for what they do. But we've got to create this framework so that everybody knows that what the hymn sheet is and how we're singing.
Right. And before we finish up, I just want to mention how it kind of strikes me that this concept relates so much to so many things that are hot topics for firms today, from from AI to succession planning and making sure that there's a solid way to replicate another lawyer's practices, or and recruiting young talent because they want to work at a place that that ensures that they have a fair shot. And I know that I'm sure many firms are doing a facepalm of course, this affects so much of our operation because billing is how we make our money. But to me, that just speaks to how important it is to have a system that really works and benefits everybody.
Absolutely. And as I say, it's a project. It's broken down, but I've managed to break it down into about 130 steps, stages of a project plan. It can be done. I'm not going to say it is absolutely easy for everybody to do. And in the conclusion of my book, the last paragraph says it's not going to always be easy. But in a way, you should, as law firm owners, they should actually be pleased that that's the case, because it means that the vast majority of the firms won't do it. And that's where you can get a competitive advantage. That's where you can have the happier clients, the happier lawyers, the people who want to come and work at your organization, and you can make more money, have a better work-life balance. And who doesn't want that?
Exactly. So thanks for being here and teaching us a bit about value-based pricing. I know I found the conversation fascinating. And if you're watching this or listening to this, please let us know in the comments what you think. And if you want to hear more from Sean, we can bring him back and discuss it more.
Look, I will happily come talk to you anytime, Justin. And I'm delighted to meet people from all over the world. And one of the interesting things is, but and I do meet lawyers from all over the world, all of our problems are the same. They're all the same. Doesn't matter whether you're in South Africa, whether you're in Sweden, whether you're in Australia or America, Canada. We're all facing exactly the same problem. So, I'm happy to help if anybody is a Everyone wants to pick up the phone. I will talk about this subject literally all day, but more than happy to help anyone if they've got a query.
Awesome. Well, thanks to our listeners, viewers, and subscribers for tuning in. If you want to see more Legal Management Talk, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and leave a comment, tell us what you think, or leave a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you want to learn more about ALA, as always, you can visit alanet.org. Until next time.